you saying that word? I don't think it means what you think it means.
Hello there. Welcome in to this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here at the microphone, your sometimes humble host, for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity, hoping you and yours are doing well, that you're having a good day, or you have a good day ahead of you. It is the Thursday edition of the podcast for the 23rd day of July, 2020. And as usually happens, my show prep pages started out blank, and today I have more stuff to talk about than I'll get to. That's the way it works. Make sure to get show notes, because some days I include the stuff I can't get to. This may be one of those days, because, let's see, I'm looking here. I've got three or four different little items down the list I'm pretty sure I won't get to today that I may include in the show notes today. So make sure you go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and click on the link for the show notes so you can see what was available for me that I may not have had time for. Boy, what will we talk about today? There's an interesting item to start things with in the absurd category. We'll kick off with a little absurdity. Trump has made a couple of decisions and made some people mad. What else is new? And Mike Rowe, the host of Dirty Jobs, had something interesting to say on social media. And I want to pass that along to you in case you missed it. But we'll get to all of that in due time. First up, I told you the story yesterday about my wife going to get tested for COVID, and I didn't. I actually started to tell you about what happened in the process and how that all went, and then I sidetracked and just stayed on that particular track instead of finishing my thought. And I wanted to tell you about her experience of going to get tested for COVID, and that was that where she went. It was one of these. I call it a doc in a box. You know what I mean? It's the little centers that pop up for the urgent family care places, that kind of a place. I don't know the exact name of it. It's not in front of me, so I don't remember it right now. But it's in a small town nearby where we sometimes go for groceries or we'll find a spot there to go grab a bite to eat now and then. And we live in the same county, but we don't live in that town. It's about 20 minutes away from where we live. And so she decided that was where she would go because the other two places she had tried were not answering the phone, which I think is interesting. If you run a healthcare facility and you don't answer your phone, what are you thinking? Can I just ask you that? What are you thinking? Because you have people who are looking to you for guidance and direction and a little help, and you're not answering your phone. You're going to make them get in their car and come to where you are to get an answer to a question. And that question could be as simple as, do you have openings to get tested for COVID today? And that was the question my wife Jane wanted to ask, and she couldn't get the answer to it. But she did get tested, and the process was that she had to be there early in the morning in order to get in line, because they only do 40 tests per day. 40. They examine 40 different people throughout the course of a business day at this urgent care place. And so she got there at 7:15. The doors open at 8. They take 40 people per day. She was number 37. She got there 45 minutes before the doors opened, and she almost didn't make the list. Number 37. And they would take people in groups of 10. So, yeah, they would take them in groups. That meant you had to wait outside in your car until your group was called. She was in the last group of the day. So she had to wait in the parking lot in her car for hours. She finally was tested at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a bit after 3 o'clock, I think. So she was there from 7:15 until 3. She spent 8 hours at that place, the vast majority of it sitting in her car in the parking lot. And that was the process. She went in, she got her test. It was one of this place has the quick tests where you can get the results back pretty quickly. So she got her test results back within just a few moments and was clean, came back negative. Hooray for us. But the process, 40 people a day, and you have to sit and wait. If you leave and your group is called and you don't get back before the next group is called, you could lose your place. And we're hearing reports of people. Now, this, by the way, should explain why we're hearing reports of people who go and get tired of waiting and they leave. You've seen this popping up in your social media, right? Where, hey, my cousin's wife's brother-in-law's third cousin went and got tested and signed in and then waited for hours and decided to go on and do something else or whatever. And then they got a call saying they were positive, right? You've been seeing that. Well, I don't know whether all of those are true or not. I suspect some of them are. But now it's a little more obvious why people get fed up and leave. Because they go, if they're not the first person in line, they're going to be there for a while. Or if they're not the first among the first 10 in line, they're going to be there for a while. And they're going to end up spending all day waiting to be tested. Now, if either you're out in the car in the parking lot, running the car, running the air conditioning from time to time, and around here, it's been in the mid-90s every day for several days now. We're having a little relief in the afternoon with rain and the like, but until that rain hits, it's in the mid-90s with incredibly high humidity, and it has been miserable to be outdoors in the last several days. So you're either sitting in the parking lot with the windows rolled down in the humidity, or you're running the motor, you're running the engine, you're running your air conditioning, or you're sitting inside with a bunch of other people, some of whom could be spreading COVID-19. It's not a good situation, but you'll spend all day long. No wonder people are getting fed up and leaving. No wonder people are tired of waiting. Especially if you're not feeling well, wow, that's rough. But that's what's happening. The demand is very high. People are scared because of the news media, and I will continue to blame it on the news media and politicians taking, ruthless advantage of the fear of people. And so you have people lining up an hour or sometimes more before a place opens to be able to get in line, to be able to get tested. In some places, you can't actually make an appointment, which is, I think, better, because at least you know there's a window. You're going to get within this amount of time, you're going to go get in line, and you're going to wait a half an hour to an hour or so, and then you'll get tested, but it doesn't destroy your entire day. I was watching a video earlier this morning where a guy in West Palm Beach, Florida, was talking about how he had to go get a COVID test before he could go home to visit relatives in another part of the country. And because his family had said, you are not coming home until you've tested negative for COVID. And that's because he's in Florida and the news media has scared everybody witless about Florida, even though we're finding out that the reporting on the case levels and deaths has been blown out of proportion in Florida. But his family has said, well, no, you can't come home and see us until you've had a negative COVID test. So he's got to go get a test. His appointment is on a specific day at a specific time. And I thought, well, he's going to go to some medical center and get tested. No, he is in his car in line and he shows video through the windscreen of a line of cars ahead of him. And at the end of that line of cars is a row of pop-up tents. There's several lines of cars. And there are pop-up tents, and the medical people are under the pop-up tents doing blood tests. You hang your arm out the window of the car, they do a blood test, and then you get the results back afterwards. But you make an appointment for that. So you know, okay, I can get an appointment at this time of the day. I'll just have to clear that part of the day out and go get it done. Instead of hoping you get within the first number of people that show up and spending your entire day. At any rate, that is what it all amounted to. So Jane spent the entire day. I mean, she ended up getting through and home at the end of the day about the same time she would had she gone into work that day. Very close to it. Not really, not even an hour sooner than she would have been home. So she basically spent an entire day, which she could have been at work, waiting to get tested and coming back negative. And that's a little bit of absurdity. I tell you something, something else that's absurd is the way New York has been treated. It's the news media, the progressive media, is treating New York as though it is the example for everyone else to follow in this particular situation. And New York City has been anything but the positive example. Democrat New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio declared back in March that the city needed an expensive, crucial emergency hospital to treat a predicted flood of COVID-19 patients. That hospital, it cost a whopping $52 million. You know how many people it treated? How long it was open? A $52 million setup. Open for 33 days. It closed on May 13. It treated a total of 79 patients. 79 patients. Bill de Blasio had to have it. They treated 79 people and were open for 33 days. It was a temporary hospital built at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center in Queens. And there's a new expose by the New York Times talking about it. The piece cites missteps made at every level of government from well before the hospital opened on April 10th. A nurse practitioner says, "I basically got paid $2,000 a day to sit on my phone and look at Facebook. We all felt guilty. I felt really ashamed, to be honest. Knowing that our patients had to endure in an overcrowded emergency department, it's frustrating how few patients were treated at facilities such as Billie Jean King," said Dr. Timothy Tan, the director of clinical operations at the Queens Hospital Center Emergency Department. So his emergency department was overcrowded, people packed into place. You know, that scenario I was talking about, sick people all around each other and non-sick people getting sick. And Bill de Blasio's much-needed hospital, $52 million, treated 79 patients. Open for 33 days. In March, just as the virus began sweeping across the city, de Blasio said, quote, "This facility will be crucial." An aide to the mayor said the alternative space was less used than we expected it to be because, well, we broke the curve, thank goodness. Really? Really? When you had places all over town that were packed, that were overburdened, and this place got used less? No. It got used less because you people, your right hand didn't know what your left hand was doing. But you were bragging about how great things were going, which is how progressives operate, in case you haven't noticed. I know, I'm not making it up. The doctors at other hospitals wanted to transfer patients to that temporary facility, but they were blocked. Bureaucracy, turf battles, communication failures. They couldn't transfer to the facility. They paid as much as $732 an hour for some doctors at this facility and made them spend hours on paperwork. They were supposed to treat coronavirus patients, but they didn't accept people with fevers. That's a hallmark symptom of the virus, by the way, having a fever. Officials said the site would serve critically ill patients, but workers said it opened with only one or two ventilators. Remember all the hubbub about ventilators? And that wasn't the only thing in the city that got set up. It was mostly unused. Remember, Andrew Cuomo persuaded the federal government to pitch in millions of bucks to turn the Javits Center, it's a huge place, turn it into a field hospital, to outfit the USNS Comfort with 500 beds to handle the overflow from packed hospitals. The ship was being overhauled in Norfolk, Virginia. Navy had to rush the work to deploy the ship quickly. It had 12 operating rooms, a medical lab, a pharmacy, a helicopter deck. It held fewer than 80 patients in New York. 90% of its available space unused. Because of the knots and the tangles of bureaucracy and turf wars and the idiocy of progressive government in New York. They went to incredible measures to treat people, demanded things, spent millions upon millions of dollars, and still they dropped the ball, and they dropped it hard. Alert the authorities. I'm out of coffee. Oh, no. Oh, my. I'm going to have to go buy some more coffee today. I think I've got one more sip left in my cup. Oh, man. And my wife's heading out of town this weekend, too. This was going to be our weekend, by the way. We were going to go get groceries, and we do it for like a month or so at a time. We buy a lot of groceries. We get all stocked up. It's just the two of us. We pack every crevice in the house. And then it's just why not? You know, if you'll go to Sam's or Costco or someplace like that, you can buy things in bulk. You save a little bit of money if you're a careful shopper. And so we go ahead and buy a bunch of groceries, but this is going to be our weekend. And then something came up. And she's traveling to Arkansas to visit some relatives. And so I'll be fending for myself this weekend, which means I'll be eating a lot of fast food. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's the Tuesday edition of the podcast, the 23rd day of July 2020. And it's time to check in on more stupidity. I say that because it amazes me that people will believe what they want to believe. If you watch MSNBC or you watch CNN, you're seeing the world presented to you through a lens of absolute absurdity, especially on MSNBC. It's just loony what these people believe. Joe Scarborough, he's been out for a while on Morning Joe. His wife said, no, you got to take some time off. You're stressed. You're going nuts. You need to take a break. Go take a break. It's like I tell you on the weekends, take a break. Stop watching the news. In fact, if you're really bummed out and scared to death about life, you should just stop watching the news, because they're working on scaring you to death because they want you to keep coming back to watch progress to see what's going on. And that does nothing but help them raise their revenue by increasing the viewer numbers. And you're helping. So don't do that. Don't watch the idiots on the mainstream progressive press. Don't. Because you'll be a whole lot happier if you'll actually go learn a little bit about how to discern what's true and what's not true while you're exploring the news online. After a little while, you start getting a good gut for it. So start working on your gut. That's what I try to tell you. And she's tried to tell Joe, Misha's tried to tell Joe, you need to take some time off. So he did. He took a little time off. And when he came back, he was just as delusional as he was when he left. He was saying that Trump should adopt Joe Biden's COVID-19 plan. Are you serious? The guy hiding in the basement? The frail old man who has to have teleprompters to keep him on track, and when he wanders off speech, all of his people backstage are going, oh, no! Because there's no telling what he's going to say? The guy who looked like he had a stroke in mid-speech the other day? Come on. That guy's plan? Oh, no. The thing is, Trump has done everything he can, and he's actually been ahead of the curve in many, many cases, and yet they keep lying to us about things. And he's also ahead of the curve when it comes to the safety of our cities and protecting the integrity of our elections and protecting the integrity of our government as far as representation is concerned, because we do live in a representative nation, you know, where you send people to represent you at the national level and the state and local level. Well, President Trump issued a memo that has the left apoplectic. Coming to us from theblaze.com, Phil Shiver writes, or Shiver, that is. Phil Shiver writes, sorry, Phil, President Donald Trump signed a memorandum Tuesday aiming to exclude the illegal immigrant population from the 2020 census appointment base used to determine how many House seats each state will have. Quote, for the purpose of the reapportionment of representatives following the 2020 census, it is the policy of the United States to exclude from the apportionment base aliens who are not in a lawful immigration status. The president wrote in the memo arguing that the policy is more consonant with the principles of representative democracy. Under these new guidelines, Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross and census officials are directed to provide the president with the total number of undocumented immigrants living in the United States, at which point the president can exclude that number from the apportionment base. The memo argues that the Constitution does not specifically define which persons must be included in the apportionment base. Quote, it suggests that the illegal immigrant population should be categorized similarly to other groups, such as those who are in the country only temporarily for business or tourism or foreign diplomatic personnel that are not counted in the apportionment base. Trump said in a statement announcing the new policy, my administration will not support giving congressional representation to aliens who enter or remain in the country unlawfully, because doing so would create perverse incentives and undermine our system of government. President Trump has been working diligently to include citizenship data in the 2020 census. Last year, his administration attempted to include a citizenship question in the census, but that move was effectively blocked by the Supreme Court. After the citizenship question effort stalled out, Trump directed the Department of Commerce in an executive order to strengthen its efforts, consistent with law, to obtain state administrative records concerning citizenship. As part of that effort, the administration began reaching out to individual states in order to arrange data sharing agreements. As of last week, the administration had entered such agreements with four states, Iowa, Nebraska, South Carolina, and South Dakota, which agreed to share driver's license and state identification information. The Democrats are furious. Immediately following its announcement, Democrats in Congress slammed the memo and promised a legal fight. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer chalked it up as an unconstitutional attempt to disparage immigrant communities. Did you hear that? Immigrant communities.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yes, the key here is illegal immigrant communities, not just immigrants. Democratic Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi similarly promised to contest the move, calling it unconstitutional and unlawful.
You keep using that word.
Oh, once again, yes.
I don't think it means what you think it
means. Unconstitutional. That's another word they don't understand. They use that word a lot because they think you don't understand what's constitutional and what's not, and they can say whatever they want about what's constitutional and what's not. Because as a government official, of course they would know, right? Yes, actually they do know. But they know most people, products of today's education system, don't know. So they can lie about whatever they want to lie about, and they know a lot of people are going to believe it. Democratic members of the House Oversight Committee, including the chair, Representative Carolyn Maloney of the Democrat of New York, announced that they would hold an emergency meeting next week to discuss a plan of action against the move. And she said in the tweet from the committee, Representative Maloney and Representative Raskin will hold an emergency hearing next week after the Trump administration's unconstitutional attempt, unconstitutional in caps, by the way, to exclude undocumented immigrants. Undocumented immigrants.
You keep using that word.
Oh, here we go again.
I don't think it means what you think it means.
No, these are illegal immigrants. They're not undocumented. To say they're undocumented gives people the impression, oh, well, they just don't have their paperwork. They'll fix that, right? No, these are people who snuck into the country. That's why they don't have their paperwork, because they can't get their paperwork because they didn't come in legally. They're here illegally. The Democrats intentionally refer to people in the United States illegally as immigrants or undocumented, as though they have a right to be here, which they do not, any more than someone secretly camping in your attic has the right to be inside your house without your knowledge or your consent. And that analogy is perfect. If you discovered someone was living in your attic or your basement, unknown to you, is that person legally living there? Of course they're not. If someone sneaks into our country and they're living in our country without coming in the front door with the knowledge of everyone who needs to know they're here, it's the same. They're camping out in our country illegally. If while you're gone, this person camping out in your attic or basement raids your fridge and your pantry, they're taking food from your table. Even if they decide to leave a little cash laying around from time to time, maybe tuck it in a pocket and you find it when doing laundry. Wow, I forgot about that 20. Wait a minute. I don't remember. Even if they're paying in some way, they're still there illegally. But the Democrats would say, no, they have a right to be in your house. They have a right to be there. Nobody's illegal. No human is an alien. You're so bigoted. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. About halfway through this Thursday edition. Now, I want to get back into this immigration thing. And I want you to be very aware that Democrats, progressives, refer to illegals just as immigrants or undocumented immigrants. They will use the undocumented label as a way to say, oh yeah, we're aware of the situation, but it's okay. And it's not okay. It's just not, any more than someone secretly living in some space in your home that you know that you never look at. Somebody in your attic or somebody in your basement, somebody camping out in your crawl space. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but it does happen. And when it happens, what do you feel? Creeped. You're all creeped out, aren't you? Oh, that's just, imagine somebody, oh, that's just, ew. Oh, no, that's wrong. You feel that way because it's wrong. And the Democrats try to condition us into accepting the wrong because it goes along with undermining our rights. They want us to surrender certain rights, the right to your private property, the right to your own space, the right to your own things. They want us to surrender those things willfully because it's compassionate and kind to do so. It is neither compassionate nor kind. If you have someone living in your attic or your basement and you don't know about it, that person is a criminal and must be dealt with accordingly. Now, I want you to be aware of this, I stay aware of it because I subscribe to a handful of things. One of the things I've told you about is the Obama administration started that Obama for America thing. They have this community organizing group that is really national, and they have an email list, and I'm on their email list. They changed at some point in the not too distant past to All on the Line, which they call themselves a grassroots advocacy campaign supported by the National Redistricting Action Fund. And they ask for support to end gerrymandering. And gerrymandering is the drawing of congressional district boundary lines to benefit specific candidates or political parties. It is something which has been done off and on, or actually constantly, for the entire time we've been a nation. Those lines have been drawn and redrawn. The districts have been shaped for political advantage. The Democrats do it constantly for their advantage. But they're waging a campaign right now to convince gullible Americans to believe that Republicans are doing it and it's evil when Republicans do it. So they want things changed, which I think is interesting, that they're fighting against Republicans doing exactly what they will do when they stop Republicans from doing it. It's really bizarre. No, you can't draw the line there. It's going to be drawn here. Well, who determines that? Well, I do. So the all on the line is campaigning for gerrymandering by Democrats and demonizing gerrymandering by Republicans. But they also weigh in on generally on the topic of the day. And yesterday, this is the email I received. President Trump signed an executive memo yesterday stating his intention to exclude undocumented residents. You get the terminology? Undocumented residents.
You keep using the whole.
I know!
I don't think it means what you think
it's not me. It's, well, undocumented residents. From the 2020 census count, which when allocating congressional seats ahead of next year's redistricting process. This unconstitutional move.
You keep using the word.
I know.
I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah, I know. This unconstitutional move comes after the Supreme Court prevented the administration from adding a citizenship question directly to the census questionnaire. Now, this is in bold with a yellow highlight. This is a direct, wait a minute, let me just emphasize it for you. This is a direct attack on the American democratic process. Every community has a constitutional right to be equally represented through apportionment and redistricting. Do you agree? Sign our petition to demand the census count be protected from manipulation. The Constitution clearly states that representatives must be apportioned by, quote, counting the whole number of persons, end quote, in each state. This very line in the 14th Amendment repealed the racist three-fifths compromise that disenfranchised black Americans through census counts. Whoa. I'm going to come back to that in just a moment, but I wanted you to hear it because it's insulting. Moving on. Despite what the Trump administration claims, this provision is not up for debate. A census count manipulated in this way would have devastating impacts on redistricting. We may not be able to rectify this manipulation for a decade, and even worse, the impacts of the bills passed under this manipulation would be felt for decades. We must stop Trump and protect the integrity of the 2020 census, apportionment, and redistricting. Sign this petition to stand on the right side of history. And it signed off all on the line. Now, what they're wanting you to believe, or their sheep to believe, is that what President Trump is doing is illegal. It's unconstitutional, and it is not. You see, the people they want to have counted are here illegally. They're camping in our attic, so to speak, or camping in our basement illegally. They're not supposed to be here. If they're not supposed to be here, they should not be counted in the census. Because counting them in the census allocates funding, federal funding, of many different types to the states, counting them. And more importantly, it sends more representatives from those states. The higher the population number, the more representatives they get. Yeah, the higher the population number, the more they get. So, a state like California, which has a huge illegal immigrant population. No, he didn't say it. See, I use the words properly. A huge illegal population. They get more representation, which means more votes in Congress. And they get more help from the federal government, more of your tax money, to help with welfare and other type of programs in their state. So the illegals are costing you and me money, and the illegals are helping the Democrats with more power in Congress. Which is why organizations like All on the Line and the Democrats and the Democrat Party are so upset about what Trump has done. Because doing things the proper way means they lose power and control. The only way they can maintain this power and control is by doing things illegally. And once you know that and understand that, you understand that the Democrats cannot do what they want to do to and in America by following a lawful process. They have to do so illegally and deceptively. They're playing the shell game with America. Keep track of which shell the pea is under. They're doing the shell game. And when you win, they blame somebody else for the House losing. Now, I said I was going to come back to this particular statement. This very line in the 14th Amendment, repeal the racist three-fifths compromise that disenfranchised black Americans through census counts. This is a gross misrepresentation of the three-fifths compromise. The three-fifths compromise was struck as a way to prevent Democrats from slave-owning states from having more representation in those states in order to speed the process of abolishing slavery. In order to do that, the Republicans very cleverly appealed to the Democrats on a level they knew would work, because the Democrats didn't look at the slaves as really as people. They looked at the slaves as property, much like livestock on a farm. They didn't look at the slaves as people equal to them. So the Republicans knew that if they approached from that perspective, they could persuade the Democrats to acknowledge that the slaves could not be counted on a census as all of a person. They had to come to some compromise. And the Democrats agreed that the slaves, each slave could be counted, but only as three-fifths of a person, not a whole person. Because the Democrats didn't see them as people. The Democrats saw them as working livestock on a farm, much like mules. This is how the Democrats saw the slaves at that time. And the Republicans knew that. And so they got the Democrats to agree that the census numbers wouldn't be as high as they could be, because those people they wanted to count weren't really people anyway, right? And in doing so, they prevented the Democrats from having more representation in Congress. And in doing so, in doing that, they managed to speed the process of abolition. Because if they had allowed the slave-owning states to have more representation, they never would have been able to pass abolition across the nation. It would have taken much longer to free those slaves had they not used this very clever method, which the Democrats today demonize and use for their political advantage. And here we go. It's the final segment of this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Got a handful of things I'm not going to get to. Real quick, 30,000 foot look. President Trump is dispatching federal law enforcement to combat crime waves in certain U.S. cities. These Democrat-controlled municipalities where riots are going on every night, destruction, mayhem, it's all going on. And the progressive Democrat mayors are all denying that this is actually, there's nothing wrong here. They're just expressing themselves. Yeah, by destroying public property and private property, that's what they're doing. They're breaking the law, and you won't do anything about it. But they're all having all of the Democrats are having a conniption about this. He actually had a chat with Lori Lightfoot of Chicago, and apparently she's under the impression that they're just going to be there to observe. And she has sworn that if it's anything besides that, that they will take legal action of some kind. Well, here's the thing. People are dying every day in Chicago, and every weekend it's almost like a sports team. You want to know how many people died? You check the news and see, 15 people got killed in Chicago over the weekend. Go team. I mean, but it's really sad. And Lori Lightfoot, who I think looks like Gollum, some people have said Beetlejuice, but Lori Lightfoot is a failure as far as being a mayor is concerned. She's an abject failure because people are dying in her city, and her response is to punish law-abiding people by insisting that they have stricter gun laws. Well, stricter gun laws are not stopping these people from shooting people. They don't care about laws anyway. Here's a breaking update. Murder is illegal. But then again, she just wants to blame something besides her lack of ability to actually really be a real leader. She's a progressive who speaks in gobbledygook and psychobabble and blames everything else in the world and hyphenates all manner of things. She's a typical progressive. She's projecting. And she's saying that, and all of these, and by the way, all of these progressive leaders in these various cities are saying that the reason they're having violence is because of Trump. No, it's not. This stuff started happening, actually, in many cases, before the George Floyd incident. People were angry. The George Floyd incident was just an excuse for people to act out even more. And the progressives are saying, just let them get it out. Like that parent that lets their child pitch a screaming hissy fit in the grocery store floor and won't deal with the kid and won't set firm boundaries and won't let their no mean no. And the kid understand that if they go any farther than after they've heard no, then life is going to get uncomfortable. They have to learn their boundaries. And clearly, these people flooding the streets in these progressive cities were all put in time out instead of learning. It could be very uncomfortable to disobey. Moving along. Mike Rowe, if you've listened to me for any length of time or followed me on Facebook, I love me some Mike Rowe. The way he responds to people who disagree with him is classic. And this is one of those instances, and I wanted to share this with you as we wrap the podcast up today. If you don't follow Mike Rowe on social media, you really should, because he's a breath of fresh air. He just is. And often he will post something written to him and he'll respond. And this is one of those. Mike, in a recent post, you said you've been to Tennessee and Georgia, giving speeches and filming for your new show. The new show, sidebar, it's kind of a Dirty Jobs reunion. He and the crew from Dirty Jobs are going to revisit places they went before. And it's cool. You should watch it. Back to the thing here. Before that, you were on the road shooting for Dirty Jobs. Is it really so important to film a television show in the midst of a pandemic? Is it responsible of you to encourage this kind of behavior when infection rates are spiking? Don't you watch the news? More and more cases every day. Aren't you concerned? that comes from Darlene Gabon. And Mike responds, "Hi, Darlene. Of course I'm concerned. I'm just not petrified. On March 15th, the day after my part of the country was locked down, I posted a link to an interview with Dr. Michael Osterholm. I'm posting it again because I believe you and everyone else in the country would benefit from listening carefully to what he has to say. Dr. Osterholm is the Director of Infectious Disease Research and Policy. This is the same epidemiologist who, 10 years ago, predicted a coronavirus would come from China and turn our country upside down. In his book, Deadliest Enemies, he described the utterly irresponsible way in which the media would report on the situation, the completely opportunistic and shamelessly political way our leaders would likely react, and the unprecedented chaos and confusion that would arise from all the mixed messages from the medical community. His resume is unexampled, and his analysis of the situation is the most logical and persuasive of any I've heard so far. He's also the only expert I know of who hasn't walked back his numbers, reconsidered his position, or moved the goalpost with regard to what we must do, what we can do, and what he expects to happen next. I say all of this because Dr. Osterholm also predicted that we could easily see 100 million COVID cases in this country, with a very strong possibility of 480,000 fatalities, even if we successfully flattened the curve. It took me a few weeks to accept this scenario, because 480,000 fatalities is a frightening number, and a lot of other experts were saying lots of conflicting things. But eventually, I came to the conclusion that Dr. Osterholm was probably correct and quickly navigated the four stages of grief that usually precede acceptance: denial, anger, bargaining, and depression. By late April, I had come to accept Dr. Osterholm's predictions as a matter of fact. Since then, I've had 3 full months to come to terms with the fact that A, I'm probably going to get COVID-19 at some point, B, I am almost certainly going to survive it, and C, I might very well give it to someone else. I hope that doesn't sound blasé or glib or fatalistic or selfish. 480,000 deaths is an obvious tragedy, and I'm deeply sympathetic to all who have been impacted thus far. I'm also very concerned for my parents and everyone else in a high-risk category. But when Dr. Osterholm says that COVID can be slowed but not stopped, I believe him. And when he says a vaccine will not necessarily hasten herd immunity, I believe him. And when he says that flattening the curve and eliminating the virus have nothing to do with each other, I believe him. Thus, for the last 3 months, I've been operating from the assumption that this is a year-round virus that's eventually going to infect 100 million people and kill roughly half of 1% of those infected. I've gotten used to those numbers in much the same way I've gotten used to the fact that 40,000 people will likely die on the highways this year. That's why I'm not panicked or surprised by tens of thousands of daily COVID cases. I've been expecting them. Unfortunately, many others have not. Every day, millions of people watch the same breathless coverage by the same breathless journalists who seem determined to do all they can to foster uncertainty. And so, millions of people are still paralyzed by fear because they haven't been given a chance to digest the truth, or what I believe to be the truth. Fact is, we can accept almost anything if we're given the facts and enough time to get our heads around them. But if we don't have an understanding of what's really happening, we simply can't get past denial and bargaining, where so many seem to be stuck, understandably so. Imagine for a moment you had no idea how many people would die in car accidents this year. Now, imagine that every single accident, over 6 million a year in the U.S. alone, were reported on the same way, in the same way that every new COVID case is reported today. Imagine every day you were told in hysterical tones that over another 16,000 accidents had occurred, resulting in another 90 deaths per day. What would that do to your willingness to drive? 6 million accidents is a lot of accidents, and 40,000 annual fatalities is a lot of death, especially if you don't know how high that number could get. But we do know the dangers of driving, and we've accepted those numbers. Consequently, we're able to make a grown-up decision about whether or not we want to assume the associated risk of operating a motor vehicle. Again, don't misunderstand. I'm not ignoring COVID, and I'm not pretending the risks at hand aren't real. I don't want to get this disease and give it to someone else any more than I want to be in a car wreck and hurt someone else. So I take precautions. I get tested often. If I can't distance, I wear a mask, especially around higher risk people. I also wear a seatbelt, obey the speed limits, and check my mirrors before changing lanes. I'm aware that we'd be a lot safer if we kept our cars in the garage. I'm also aware that we'd be a lot safer if we all kept ourselves in the house. But that's not why cars or people exist. Anyway, Darlene, that's a long way of saying that I have accepted Dr. Osterholm's numbers, and now, after 3 months of acceptance, I've made a decision on how I wish to live my life. Sooner or later, you will too. We all will. And he signs it, Mike. As usual, Mike Rowe cuts to the core of things. And I've included this in the show notes today, the link to it. And I think you should check out the video he's talking about with Dr. Osterholm. The link is in this particular piece. You should watch it for yourself and see what the man has to say. Check his resume. The link is in the piece to his resume. And remember, the news media is playing a dangerous game with America on many topics. And the politicians are politicizing the COVID issue for their political advantage, as they do everything. And if we live in fear all of our lives, we may as well keep our cars in the garage and never leave the house. But we have to live life. So go live your life today. And join me back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.